This is Rich Procida. We here at Bible Study for Progressives have partnered with OC Thinkers to produce a series of podcasts on resisting authoritarian structures in politics and organizing. This is part one of that series. In this show, we lay the foundation for the remaining shows and examine why Trump supporters believe obviously false things. Welcome to Bible Study for Progressives, a show where moderates, liberals, and leftists of all faiths and ideologies come together to discuss scripture, spirituality, and politics. We engage Scripture in its historical context, plumb its depths for wisdom and guidance, and apply its lessons to current events and social issues. Whether you're a liberal evangelical, a New Age spiritualist, a social justice activist, or a postmodern theologian, there's something in this show for you. Come, be energized in spirit and mind to understand the word and what it means to be a spiritual person in today's world.
Well, thanks for coming, everybody. This is OC Thinkers. Tonight's topic is resisting authoritarian structures in politics and organizing. We've got Rich Procida with us and Lisa Snow. And my name is Rhett Kozeski. I'm the facilitator. And I'm just going to take you through a few slides here, and we'll kind of turn it over to Rich and Lisa to get started. So what is OC Thinkers? So obviously, welcome for coming. This has been going on for quite a few years now. I've just taken this over within the last year, maybe a little bit more. I can't even remember, lost track of time. But this is a place where people can come together with different viewpoints, share ideas, discuss issues, apply the tools of critical thinking. I really try to stress that, to really try to be as unbiased as possible, really use, you know, the tools of critical thinking. And we cover a lot of different controversial topics. And if you look back through our history, which actually some of it's not there because the other group actually got disbanded, but we've covered everything, politics, religion, any topic that's controversial, we've probably covered it at one point in the past. So other than that, my general goal is, why do I do this? I love to search for the truth, find truth. I consider myself a truth seeker forever. I like to learn new things, influence positive change, build a tolerance, and tolerance on a positive side, not just tolerance, oh, I hate you, but I tolerate you, but build more positive tolerance than negative. I believe we are in a complex world, and we do need to coexist. We need to learn how to get together, understand each other. I love to break stereotypes and debunk myths, trying to get to the truth of the matter. And the biggest thing I want to emphasize here is the diversity of the group. Traditionally, we have Christians, non-Christians, and sometimes Muslims join. So we've got a fairly wide range of religious diversity. And then when I did a four-part series on politics, we actually had several Trump supporters join us. So we've got probably Democrats, Republicans, maybe some independents. So we typically, sometimes we get a large diversity of political views as well. And that's my goal. So just keep that in mind when you're sharing and discussing. And then another quick thing about bias versus informed bias. The last time Rich and Lisa joined us, we had a couple people just exploding the chat with pretty much propaganda. And it was ironic because it was actually a presentation on propaganda. And questions and comments came in there about, you know, bias and stuff like that. You know, we're not trying to pretend to not have opinions here. I mean, you know, once I introduce Rich here in a minute, you know, he's a progressive, I'm a progressive, you know, we lean towards, you know, the Democrat, but we're just trying to have a discussion about this. And I loved it when we had the diversity. I loved learning from the Trump supporters, what made them click? Why do you believe what you believe? Why did you vote for him? So I want to keep that dialogue healthy. And just keep in mind that there's kind of a technical word, bias, which actually means that you kind of ignore the opposition opinion. But there's more general term bias just mean I'm an informed bias. I've done some studies. I've made a decision on what I believe. So just keep those two in balance a bit. And then, you know, generally we're nonpartisan. Obviously we do have opinions though. So we're not trying to hide any of that either. So just keep that in mind. So I haven't had to share this too much in the past, but just a couple discussion guidelines. I'm just going to flip through this really quick. Again, my goal is for people to think critically about some of these topics that that Rich and Lisa bring up, and think about active listening as Rich, you know, guides us through this discussion. You know, really listen before you make a comment. Sometimes you'll see that person just waiting to react before they've even listened to the entire message that what's being said. So practice your active listening, try not to monopolize, give people, you know, give each person a time to take a turn. And then again, try not to overgeneralize, try to speak from experience, like, well, this is what I've experienced, or this is what I've seen. Try not to interrupt each other. Again, we're not going to force everybody to stay on mute, but let people finish making their comment before you jump in with yours. But it's okay to challenge each other, but respectfully. We don't have to all be politically correct here, but just be respectful. And try to work towards a shared understanding. I love to learn about what other people are thinking and why they think the way they do. So with those things said, let me introduce Rich. Rich is an author, an attorney, and a journalist, and he is part of Bible Study for Progressives. He can introduce himself a little bit more than that if he has some more stuff to share. And then we have Lisa Snow with us. She's a media psychology specialist, and she was they were both with us a month or so ago. And I'm really enjoyed having them back. So Rich, go ahead and take it away.
All right, thank you. So this is what I've decided to do is make this a discussion. So if you don't have any noises, you might want to keep your mic off or keep your trigger finger on the mic button and hop in with comments. My name's Rich Procida. I'm an attorney and author and journalist. I write for laprogressive.com, and I also produce a podcast called Bible Study for Progressives to show where moderates, liberals, and leftists of all faiths and ideologies come together to discuss scripture, spirituality, and politics. And so I do a lot of politics-only shows on that. So it's kind of a news and politics podcast, and sometimes it's Bible studies. And I've been writing a lot about propaganda and the effect on the election and the narratives that are coming out. And what I decided, I wrote an article called Resisting Authoritarian Structures in Politics and Organizing. So what I'm going to do is read the article, maybe paragraph by paragraph, sentence by, or sometimes even just a sentence, and get you guys to comment and see if that works. Otherwise, we're just going to read it through and then have a discussion afterwards if it doesn't work. Lisa is a media psychology specialist. She's written a book on propaganda. She's worked on a movie, The Brainwashing of My Dad, where she was a consultant for that. So she's worked on media and the effects of propaganda and other media tricks. So we'll just begin. And I actually have a question for you guys. I think that there are at least 30% of Americans who believe everything Trump says. I mean, everything that Trump says. There's nothing that Trump doesn't say that they don't believe. What do you guys think about that? About right number, more, less? We could do a poll. So, and what they believe are things that are obviously false, right? I mean, can some of you guys come up with some of the things? I mean, the things I'm think of is that, like, they have a constitutional right not to wear mask, or that climate change is a hoax, or that Obama wasn't born in this country. These types of things. And what basis do they have to have these beliefs? Do they have and Lisa, feel free to jump in at any time. Go ahead.
Actually, I was going to say a big one to me, and this is something that I kind of always go back to check myself. And that's that many of them believed that the economy was very much worse off under Obama after 8 years than when he took office. And I saw that kind of evolve. And the reason is, I people may not have been happy with the economy after 8 years. I understand that. But when Obama took office, I was working at a large corporation, getting economic forecasts, and he literally took office when the economy was off the cliff. And the leading economists didn't even know when it was going to bottom out as he was taking office, because they didn't know what he was going to do and what was going to happen next. That's how bad it was, right? But into October, they would swear that it was worse off than when he took office, which was just factually inaccurate. When they looked at the numbers, they would say the numbers didn't represent, or they were lies, right? And here's the here's the thing. There's that element, but here's the amazing thing. November and December, when those very same reporting offices reported numbers as they had been doing, I was paying attention to this because I thought, what's going to happen, right? When he won. So when those very same reporting offices, those departments reported numbers in November and December, before he even took office, he claimed that they were because he got elected. And I thought he was going to have to come up with another metric, or they were going to have to do something to say intellectually, you know, consistently, based on them saying these are all bad numbers and bogus. I was paying attention because I thought, how is he going to prove things have gotten better if these numbers are all bogus? It turned out not to be a problem. In November and December, before he took office and they reported numbers, even for October, he claimed it was because of him and his election. And the people that I saw, again, from my sampling of all the people, my understanding, they seemed to buy it 100%. And it just it didn't even matter to them. So I just check myself when we say, oh, something's going to get through. I go back to that point in time and just think, you know, for a group of people, he can say anything.
So why do you guys think that they believe these things so easy? I mean, 30%, it's important not to there's a lot, 70% is a lot of people. So it's not everybody, but if it's 30%, 35, 40, 25, it's still a heck of a lot of people. Why do you think that they just believe these things? Ron, go ahead, unmute yourself, Ron.
Just for a point of clarity, Rich, you're saying 25-30% of all Americans, or 25% of all conservatives believe in Trump?
I'm thinking, well, we've seen Trump have a solid base of around, it's been 40%, it's going down to 35. Now, I assume, and this is just an estimate on my part, I mean, I wrote it in the article, but I don't have any statistical way to prove it, so that's why I'm sort of leaving it open. But some percentage of those people in his base don't believe everything he says. But how many of that base believes everything that he says? And then why? Why do they believe things that are obviously false, that we all know are obviously false? Unless they're not false, that's another opinion to have. Right? I mean, are they really just that ignorant? I mean, it's really easy just to scratch our head and say, hey, look how stupid they are. Right? Phil.
I do wonder about the 30% number. I wish you did have stats on it, because there are a number of people that voted for him because of what he could do in terms of getting conservative judges and Supreme Court that have nothing to do with whether or not they believe him. So the number is certainly smaller than the 40%, but I wish I knew too. So in terms of generally why people believe they have an interest in what he's doing, there's a lot of confirmation bias. I've talked to a number of people that are thoroughly convinced that he is sort of a good guy. He is a good business person, and they are they're backing that up. There's sort of a sunk cost on what they already knew. They don't want to see conflict with that. So you've got a scale that, as you go down to smaller percentages, gets less and less rational, if you will, and more rationalized. And at the bottom of that scale is the most conspiracy theory laden people that will believe pretty much anything he says.
Right. And then QAnon, they have the QAnon people who believe crazy stuff as well.
Yeah.
Is it possible that they're just doing what we all do? We follow our leaders and rely on our trusted sources. I mean, they follow Donald Trump, they rely on Fox News. You know, and when we do that, we make ourselves vulnerable to manipulation. If all our sources, and we just rely on those sources without really considering other opinions. But I do it too. You know, I can't stand listening to Fox News. It increases my blood pressure. I start yelling at the TV. It's not really worth me watching it. But MSNBC and CNN don't do that to me. And I think I can get some sources of information. Go ahead, Rhett.
No, let go ahead and finish your thought there if you want.
No, that's it. Go ahead.
Okay, so yeah, like from a critical thinking perspective, there are some people that just tend to follow actors, politicians, whoever, just kind of blindly. And there's a spectrum of people that accept things, just everything they do. And then some people who think just a little bit critically. And then obviously people who think a lot critically. One of the things I like to do is just take each bit of information for what it's worth and try to analyze it and say, what's the source, who it came from, what's the likelihood of this being true? And if you've ever read a book and you agreed with 100% of everything that was in that book, you know, it's possible, but you might be like, are you just, you know, was it like confirmation bias? You read something that you kind of already agreed with and you were just so sucked into that you believed everything. I don't think there's been ever a book that I've read that I didn't at least question something or that I had to fact check it or something. And so, like I said, full disclosure, I'm a, you know, registered Democrat. I've always voted Democrat, but I'm not a huge fan of Biden, for example. And I've heard some critical comments about Obama. And I'm like, yeah, okay, they could be right. You know, he wasn't perfect. He had some things that he maybe did wrong, and maybe they weren't brought out in the press that much. That's fine. Let's go check those things out. And I might agree with that he wasn't perfect. But to think that somebody is completely perfect is, you should make yourself wonder, right? You should be like, wow, this person can do no wrong. And it's a great example, Rich, because I won't mention any names, but I've got a family member who during the Mueller report time said basically, well, I don't really care if he did anything wrong because he's done so many good things. And I'm like, are you serious? I mean, basically just to sweep some of those results under the carpet like that without being at least critical, you can say, well, he did some things wrong, but I think he did more things right. That's an opinion. That's fine. I would accept that. But to say that I don't care if he did anything wrong because he's done so many good things, that's a red flag for everybody to consider.
Ron.
There's another side to this, and I know you're a registered Democrat. I'm currently a registered Republican. I thought I was registered independent, but I lean more towards the conservative side of things. There is another side to this that I think plays into this, and it's as bad as Trump is to most conservatives that I talk to, the conservatives I know have perceived, rightly or wrongly, that they've gotten punched in the face by media, when Obama came out and said those fateful words, I'm paraphrasing, so they cling to their God and guns. I mean, they knew who he was targeting. It's regarded as flyover country. A lot of conservatives perceive that they've been insulted by Democrats, and they perceive that they haven't been insulted by Republicans. Now, whether that's right or wrong, I'm in this conversation because I'm trying to figure out what's right and wrong. I just think that a lot of people I talk to, they don't give a damn about the truth because this guy is at least on their side, and he at least comes off as understanding where they're coming from. And a lot of Democrats I talk to are like, what the hell are you talking about? And I'm going, you don't get it, do you? It's a narrative that people cling to, and I think it's playing into this thing hugely I could use that term that I hate. Anyway, thoughts on that?
Go ahead, Lisa.
Just real quickly, that what you're talking about, and this is to wrap, tie this back into a little bit of what we were talking about with the authoritarianism. I think that what's happened is, I'm going to go real quick, but it goes back to like 9/11 when Bush said, you're with us, you're against us. And it became this polar good versus evil sort of narrative. And then the us changed over time in some people's minds, where it went from against terrorism, you know, terrorists and non-terrorists, then the United States and the world, then Republicans versus Democrats. And then it kind of worked its way down. And when you look at who them is, them are always evil. And us is always good. And it's kind of refined us down to a really solid group of us that is supposedly good and trying to save the country. And like you said, the narrative, right? I mean, it's, and Obama's comments fed into that. This goes back a little ways. The reason that's important is because when you add that us versus them mentality, which can actually be stoked and increased by fear. So you'll see a lot in right-wing media about the Democrats are coming after you, they hate you, they're coming after your way of life, we have to save the country. You see a lot of that with this us versus them sort of mentality. There's, I've got some video clips of them even years ago saying Democrats are terrorists, and making the equivalent of Democrats are terrorists. And it was believable because in their mind, them is all evil. So if you're on this them side of the equation, everybody there is evil. It's not a matter of degree. It's just everybody's evil. So equating the left to terrorism, people who want to destroy the country, becomes relatively easy. And authoritarianism is stoked by this us versus them mentality, the use of fear, and that creates a whole bunch of things like we've seen: aggression, lack of empathy, and inconsistent thinking, where people don't think consistently. They'll say two things that are both can't be true, and they don't seem to realize it. So I think that that's part of it. And then what happens with this us versus them thinking is that they take, and we all do this, if we get into this strong us versus them thinking, we will take people and comments made from somebody in our in-group, and we tend to believe them and give them a lot more credibility, unearned credibility, only because of their group association. Now you add to that the media environment in which things are happening so fast, and a lot of times you don't have time to evaluate all the information coming at you. So you have a tendency to just take, if somebody's in your group, you tend to believe it and take it because you don't have time to dig through it all and think it all through. So that us versus them mentality and that trust and that believability becomes even more important.
Jeremy.
Thanks. I want to go back to your original question, Rich, and build on something that Rhett said. I spent 30 years as an educator on both the elementary level and the college level, the university level. And what I've found starting in the elementary level is the manipulation of curriculum. And we even do that on the college level. And so I think there's a definite dumbing down of people. And when I say dumbing down, I don't say that to be rude. I mean more that people don't critically think. We don't prepare them in elementary through high school to learn how to actually read and critically analyze information. And once they get to college, they have no clue. And I say this from the perspective of having watched curriculum change, go from being teacher-based, teacher-promoted, to being government-promoted, politically promoted curriculum. And so when we have a society that doesn't critically think or critically analyze information, I think it's really easy to get people to follow whatever they're told. I think a lot of people follow Trump or whatever leader, but it's also based on the fact that they don't know how to critically analyze the information that is available to them. I even go all the way back to what happened in Nazi Germany. This was the most advanced nation on the planet, and yet people followed blindly because they were in such a bad strait economically that they just wanted to have something to follow to get out of it. So I think we've made it really easy in this country for people to follow blindly because we've literally removed the critical thinking skills necessary in the education system. That's my opinion, but it's also based on my experience of having taught for 30 years and watched curriculum literally change. The best example I can give is just 4 years ago, I would give a student a paper, for instance, on tobacco. Tell me the positives, the negatives, defend a position. And what I would get is students coming to me at the college level saying, oh, I found this wonderful research. It came from Harvard University. And then I would look at the research with them, and I would point out, and who underwrote this research? Oh, it's a guy named R.J. Reynolds. And you're looking at them going, a guy named R.J. Reynolds is not a guy, it's a tobacco company. And therefore, is there not, as Rhett said, that word bias, isn't there an innate bias in what that person is reading and that information? And if they don't know how to differentiate that, oh, this is biased from the get-go, then they just follow along blindly like, oh, this is okay. So I tend to believe that a lot of people follow Trump or whoever because they don't have the critical thinking skills necessary. And remember, I think critical thinking skills don't just come from education. They also come from life experience. I mean, it has to be tempered with a lot of things.
Thank you, Jeremy. Okay, Sudi, sure. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, some of the stuff I wanted to say was already mentioned, but as an immigrant who has lived here for 37 years, and I lived in Michigan and I lived in California half and half, I can see the great difference on how people are perceived and how they, you know, the attitude towards immigrants. You would think that California being more progressive, that they would be more open to the to immigrants. That's not true. Michigan has a huge number of Middle Eastern people there, and the Jews and the Blacks and the Muslims have managed to live among each other far better than I see various different segments of the global community living here in California. It's very segmented. That's what it is in California. But the political correctness, the part that Bill Maher is always questioning, I believe it really pushed a lot of people to go in hiding and find those people who were just like them and thought like them or even were worse than them in their very pigeonhole view of things. And, you know, they were breeding among each other. So underground, I feel like, you know, a group of people became far more rogue. And Trump came and purposely ignited that fire of xenophobia, racism, sexism, you know, all of that. And, you know, of course, you know, some of the Obama era economic decisions were not well, you know, received by a lot of the factory people, you know, or even people who were in, you know, banking and other industries that they did a lot of outsourcing to other countries. It just became, as was mentioned before, the us against them, but the them was always the immigrants. Them was the Black, the brown community. And so we are here at this divide right now, and it has become, for somebody like me who went through a revolution in Iran, I saw religious bigotry, I've seen prosecutions, I've seen executions. Trump era is extremely, extremely painful for me to endure because what I saw in Iran is happening in the United States. And there's no ifs and buts about it. The fascism is here and it's near. And this is not about being a Republican. I can't even imagine people who believe in Bible can be okay with someone like Trump. And so that itself reminds me again, because, you know, I lived also many years in Germany, of the stories I heard from the Germans, because I did ask them, the elders, why would you stay quiet? Or like, why did your family stay quiet? And so I see that complicity right now in the United States, and it's very scary, and it's very unfortunate. You know, when I see abductions in unnamed cars with people who don't write you, you know, they don't tell you why they're capturing you, they don't read your rights, and they just abduct you right in the middle of the streets of New York. This is not supposed to happen in the United States. I don't give a damn like what people believe in or they feel like they have been questioned. Of course, if you, you know, if you're racist, you're sexist, or you're xenophobic, and you're talking nonsense, you have to be called out on it. And if they get, you know, if they're conservative and they get offended by that, so be it. When are we going to grow? I mean, this country, as far as, you know, like I've said, I lived most of my life in the United States. But in comparison to Europe and other places, this country is so backward. It has so much room to grow. And it's a laughingstock of many other countries. So as Democrats, as progressives, as people of faith, whatever, you know, we find ourselves, we have to call out, we have to reach out, and we have to open up people's horizons, because the way it's going, and, you know, God forbid if Trump was to re-elected, I don't know what's going to come from this country.
Thank you, Suda. Trisha, did you want to say something? There you go.
Thank you. Okay, so I have been taking a class on populism, and I find that the idea about populism answers a lot of my questions and issues that we're addressing here. That for Americans, the system is no longer meeting their needs. Like in the past, you know, before Nixon and all this political distrust, the system met their needs in that most of society felt future generations are going to be more successful than them. The media was somewhat controlled, so you had a limited resource of information. You didn't have these extremists on the same footing via social media as the mainstream media. So you're getting a lot of extremist ideas as well that people don't necessarily differentiate that's been had any filters applied to it. So you have a community that's feels like the system's let them down. So that makes us vulnerable to someone coming along, demigods coming along and saying, I represent the true people. I can fix your problems, which is what Trump did, which is what far left people do as well. Anybody coming along, no matter how ridiculous, promising to truly represent the people, to truly address their problems, our society is vulnerable to now. And no matter how self-serving or evil that person may be, you know, we see it with Trump, and I'm from the far left. And so I feel like I've really learned the lessons of the far left as far as how they utilize the same kind of strategies. Just as Trump does, the far left demonizes the other. They say they're the true speaker of the people, and anybody contradicting them is against the people. You try to control the media, and you see that with cancel culture. And of course, Trump wants to monopolize the media. He would like to do so legally. So you have the same kind of things happening on the left and the right. And I think to a great degree, it's because Americans are very disaffected and don't feel like our democratic system works for them. And I think it's also the social media, the availability of media, and people don't distinguish between mainstream thought and radical thought. It all seems the same on the internet. So you don't have that filtering. And the other thing is the global economy has left very many people disaffected. And I think another issue addressed in populism is there's mass immigration. And I'm not against immigration. I'm not especially against legitimate refugees. But it does have, when it's really unfettered, like it has been, like in Europe, you see it a lot, it disrupts the social structure to a certain degree. Immigrants can be difficult to absorb into the society, not only because it puts stress on the system as far as economics, but it also threatens people, how they feel in their social hierarchy, in the society's hierarchy. So it's threatening to people in that way. So those are the things that I think have affected it.
Thank you, Tricia. So because of some of the things that are so bizarre that they have no real legitimate basis for believing, I sort of feel that they're being manipulated, but they're responsible for their own behaviors and their own attitudes. But they're willfully deceived, that they allow themselves to be deceived. If that's the case, if they're willfully deceived, as much as they are deceived to believe things that are patently false, absolutely no basis for having those beliefs, you can't inject bleach or chlorine into your veins to get rid of COVID, you need to wear a mask, that they have allowed themselves to deceive for their own purposes, like sort of Adam and Eve. They allow themselves to be deceived in anticipation of their own personal gain. Now, if they can be deceived, how about us? Are we being manipulated too? Can't, you know, I write down here, we cannot trust our news sources completely and cannot truly know the motives of our leaders. Who are they really behind the scenes? Who are our leaders behind the scenes when nobody's looking? What is the agenda, the organization? It looks different from where you are in the organization. So if you're on the bottom, it looks a lot different than if you're at the top or if you're in the middle. So what is the agenda? Is it the agenda they say, or is it the agenda that of the higher levels? What the stated agenda and the actual objectives of our leaders may be two different things.
This has been Bible Study for Progressives. If you enjoyed the program, please subscribe to our podcast or put us in your favorites and write a 5-star review. Tell your friends about us and share us on social media. Follow us on Facebook and click the donate button at modernlectionaries.blogspot.com. Your support will help us reach more people, produce more and better shows, and cover the cost of production. Feel free to send me a note or comment on the show. I would love to hear from you. Until next time, this is Rich Procida. Thank you for listening.